Hello and welcome to our Sinton's Neurotrauma podcast series, where over the coming weeks we'll be talking to different people who are involved in the rehabilitation process and the multidisciplinary teams that we set up. My name's David Pritchard and I'm the head of marketing here at Sinton's. Now, we have recorded 5 of these podcasts in total, each lasting approximately 30 to 40 minutes, and we'll be bringing them to you over the coming weeks and months. Our speakers from Sinton's, partner and head of personal injury Mark Quigley, along with partner and neurotrauma lawyer Kate Oliver. Our special guest speaker today is Sue Rain, who is a neurophysiotherapist at Optimize Neurotherapy Centre. So without any further ado, straight over to Mark. Mark, good morning and over to you.
Sue, thank you so much for joining us today in a series of podcasts which we are preparing with people who work within multidisciplinary teams alongside our clients in order to promote and enhance their rehabilitation options. Really excited to hear more about you and the role of the neurophysiotherapist within the MDT. But let's begin at the beginning, shall we, and just find out a little bit more about you and what your journey has been like. How is it that you came to do what you do now?
I would like to think it was quite simple, but I guess it started that I initially enjoyed sport and more sport and only sport when I was at school. And that carried on for some time until I decided that I wanted to have a career that wasn't in sport because I enjoyed it too much. So I didn't want to spoil it by doing other things. So I went into art and design and screen printing instead. But through my sport, I ended up having injuries, met a number of physios, and then thought, actually, you know what, I think I quite like this, and I think this is what I'd like to do. So that was really the start of where I changed into a career that's continued to today. I didn't have the qualifications, so I had to go back and get some different ones. So while I was doing that, I worked at Bishop Auckland General Hospital as a physiotherapy assistant, which gave me a great opportunity and lots of experience working not just in care of the elderly, but in stroke rehabilitation. I went to Newcastle Poly, which is now University of Northumbria in Newcastle. Very posh name now. Even at that time, I was really still into sport and that's what I was going to do. So finishing uni, I went to all my rotations in Sunderland and Newcastle and eventually ended up at Hunters Moor, as you'd know, which is the regional neuro rehab centre that went across to Walkergate Park. And that was really where I decided that although I was doing sports injury on an evening, that was the point where I decided neuro rehab was for me and again, the rest of my career. So from that point on, I continued at Hunters Moor, where I did all of the rotations and specialty rotations in neuro. I worked with an experienced MDT and had a wide variety of complex clients or patients that really pushed my knowledge and clinical skill. At that point, I then did more courses, conferences to push me further until I got to a point where I thought I need more again. So I went through a very rigorous process to start training to become a Bobath tutor. And from then, that was really an uphill battle to really push myself to achieve the skills that I've got today. In the meantime, I did an MSc because I obviously was bored. So I completed that in 2004 and qualified as a Bobath tutor or International Bobath Instructors Training Association member in 2005. That really pushed me most of all because I then had to start teaching and educating others, particularly physios and OTs within the Bobath concept, which is an approach really to physical input in neuro rehabilitation. I continue to work and teach. And then as a clinical lead physiotherapist at Walkergate Park, supporting regional neuro rehabilitation, neurobehavioral, neuropsychiatry services, the government decided to put into a gender for change process. And as that was being implemented, it had lots of challenges for physiotherapy as well as all the other services with a reduction in staff as well as resources. And that was really the push that I needed to take me out of the NHS and into private practice. And in 2010, I started Optimized Neurotherapy Centre, which is where I am today. When people say, what's my level of expertise? Then I would say it's within an area of acquired brain and spinal cord injuries. but with the breadth of study and knowledge and experience, I probably work a lot with clients with complex conditions or with those who need to return to specialist areas of high level physical activity or function. So it's one of those putting my hands to everything really, but applying the same principles along the way. So I'm at that point of still being very young, but knowing about where the time has got to get me to here.
It's fascinating. And it's interesting that you describe it as a push away from the NHS into private practice. So without agenda for change, it could be that you would still be within the NHS.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think I like working with people, and there's people in the NHS and there's people outside of the NHS. I never really had a desire to move on, really, until it got to a point where I felt what I could provide was being compromised and I couldn't provide the therapy intervention that I know and knew at that time that the patients I worked with deserved. So it was a very sad day when I had to make the decision to move from the NHS, but I don't think I've actually looked back. I might work with clients in litigation processes, but I work with a lot of other patients or clients who actually can't get intervention elsewhere at the moment. So I still work with people and they're still as amazing as ever.
Great to hear. And you mentioned that it was your time at Hunters Moor that drew you into neurorehabilitation. What was it about neuro made you decide you wanted that extra degree of complexity?
Yeah, I think it's an area that I worked with. We always had a large group of physios, and watching them work and seeing what they could do with clients, again, always pushed me to want to be able to do the same. They're complex. They've potentially got cognitive, communication, perceptual problems as well as physical. They keep you on your toes. They offer a level of eye-opening stimulation that helps you want to continue to learn. Every day is different, and every client brings with them new challenges that pushes me to be better at what I do. And there's never really a day where I get bored. And Hunters Moor gave me that vision that was something that I would like to do.
That's great. And it's really exciting and interesting to hear you speak about it as well. And I know some of the clients that we've worked on together are very varied and certainly push boundaries in what they want to do and achieve. And it's fantastic seeing the results that you've been able to get with them as well. So I suppose most people will know what a physiotherapist is, but some might not necessarily know what the kind of open quote neuro at the beginning of the word. How is that different, would you say, from a kind of, I don't want to use the word just to offend any physiotherapist, because I've, with my sporting background, used many physiotherapists as well and have great admiration for them. But how is yours, would you say, different to physiotherapy, and what would you say your role is?
Well, I think we all know that physiotherapy is that science-based healthcare profession that focuses on reducing impairments that impact on areas of movement and physical function. I think as a specialty, neuro rehab demands an increased awareness and knowledge of neural function, the impact that has on the musculoskeletal, sensory, neuromuscular, as well as cardiovascular and other systems that support that. As a therapist, you also have to have an ability to work with people with communication, perceptual, cognitive, sometimes behavioural problems. And I suppose it's being able to, like all physios, be able to assess or evaluate the person in front of you, have an understanding of the impairments, and look at how you can tackle those to be able to improve the efficiency of their motor output or their movement and function. So I'd say there's lots of similarities in physiotherapy, but in neuro, I would say there's likely to be a lot more hands-on and a lot more work through your hands in communication and guiding the individual to be able to achieve their potential.
I guess that in the field of neurophysiotherapy, you have the cognitive issues associated with brain injury as well as the physical impairments. And that combination of the two is a unique part of what you do and what you bring to the role.
Yes, very much. As individuals, we're all motivated by different things and we all understand things in a different way. if you've got somebody that has cognitive difficulties, then they don't always understand the world or movement in the way that we do. And that's been compromised to some extent. They don't always have the motivation or the drive, and they don't always have the willingness to take part in the work that you think would be really helpful for them. So sometimes you really have to put out all the stops to be able to, I suppose, guide them in the way that they understand and they can receive information to be able to get the most from them.
That leads on to the role that you fulfill within the MDT structure itself, Sue. What does that look like? How do you interact with your fellow healthcare professionals, the case manager and the litigation team within the MDT? How does that fit in?
I think what's nice about an MDT, I've had experience of that for quite a long time throughout my career. What's nice is to have a team of people that all have different levels of experience in different areas that make it very rounded for what outcomes that the client might need to achieve. My specific role is one where I have an understanding of their physical presentation, what their physical needs are, and potentially the recommendations that we need to consider to help them achieve the best they can in physical areas. So in the same way as I may rely on information from the other MDT members in relation to communication, cognition, and so on, to enable me to be able to do the best job I can do for the client, then I share my knowledge or experience to the rest of the MDT to enable them to use the physical areas to be able to achieve the best they can do with the client as well. It is, as they say, teamwork. And we all work together to be able to achieve the level of independence that a client requires.
And how would you say that the lawyers fit into that with you?
Oh, the lawyers. They get me at the computer doing lots of paperwork, sometimes last minute. They quite often like lots of T's crossing and I's dotting. But to be honest, I would see the lawyers as they have a really important part to play in providing the resources that are essential to enable the MDT to do their job and for the rehabilitation process to go on. So for me, the lawyers go away with all of the information about what the client's presentation is, what their needs are, potentially how much it's going to cost to overcome some of the issues as a result of an accident or an incident. And then they come back with some resources that we can all put together. So for me, they have an essential role. I just wish more clients or patients have access to them, but unfortunately they don't. But those that do have really get the best of rehabilitation that money can buy, and it enables them to be able to achieve their most optimum potential, really.
No, absolutely. And I think it's hard, isn't it, when you see the haves and have-nots to some degree, and you spoke earlier about your experience in looking at the provision and availability of treatment privately and within the NHS. But I think we have the same frustration and issues sometimes when we have funding issues on a case, where we might have a client that we know that if we could just get some money to you and just get them working with you and with others in terms of other therapy disciplines, that the potential that they have for recovery is great. And it can be as frustrating for us as it can probably for you as well. So
it's almost one of those things that where we look at the availability of resources. The NHS has resources and it's funded by taxpayers, and the government put that in place. So really, some of those resources are a little bit invisible, and we're a little bit accountable, but perhaps not as much as we're accountable in the litigation process, where we really do have to have somebody like the lawyers looking on and saying, are these resources being used effectively and working towards to achieve the goals that we set out? It's still resources, there's still limitations, but where we can access resources, it really does make a difference.
There's a clue in the name of your business, Sue, about what your core purpose as a physiotherapist is: to optimize outcomes. How do you set about doing so? How do you engage with clients and your fellow MDT members to set the rehabilitation goals? And to what extent are you able to monitor and measure outcomes as the rehabilitation process progresses?
Yeah, I think what's key and one of the areas that I feel really strongly about is that not only have we got the MDT, but we've also got a team with regard to the client. And I think at the very start, when we're providing assessment and treatment and evaluation to enable us to identify what that individual's potential will be, then we also have discussions about what they want to achieve so that we can direct our intervention to be as effective as we can to achieve those, because the two of us have to work together to be able to access and to achieve that. If I'm working on one thing and the client's working on something different, then we're only going to fail. I think it's important to them to be able to see the progress that they're making, because when you live in something, you don't always see that you're any different one day to the next or one week to the next. So it's important that we take measurements and we complete outcome measures. And we quite often use video footage so that the client can see where they've started in the process of rehabilitation and at different points as we go along until we get to the end of what they want to achieve. That not only justifies the intervention that we're providing, but it also helps motivate the individual that the efforts they're putting in are also very rewarding and worthwhile.
And very helpful from the litigation perspective to be able to benchmark and document that progress. And as you say, to demonstrate that the intervention is actually fulfilling its aims.
Yes, very much so.
And it can make such a functional difference as well, can't it? Because you can have somebody that before might have needed 24-hour care or a high degree of care, but actually with involvement and better physical ability, they could perhaps make themselves a drink or get out of bed themselves with the appropriate equipment as well. So it can make a real difference to what that person's life is going to look like post rehab as well.
Yeah, and like I said at the beginning, there's a wide variety of individuals that we work with. It's them just being able to sit up and to be able to maintain a position where they can use an iPad or something else with others. Then they want to return to competitive sport. To others, it's walking down the aisle. So everybody's goals are different. But yes, the difference we can make can be enormous. But key to that is that we work with the client, we guide the client, but the person at the end of the day that really does make those changes is the client themselves. And we can't make anybody do anything, although people think we can. We can only guide that client, and we need to motivate them and encourage them and provide whatever we need or whatever they need to get them to reach those goals.
And you spoke about, obviously, engagement and probably to a degree insight as well. But presumably, do you have clients that are the opposite in terms of those that don't want to engage and that are actually wanting to throw themselves fully into rehabilitation? There might then be issues with fatigue and pacing.
We have a lot of people that come to us who are as obsessive and compulsive as me as far as training and sport or any activities they do. I guess I'm one that has a big understanding of that, so I can see how they tick. And in a way, it's great that they're so motivated. But as a motivated person, I think the more information you share with them and give them an understanding of what they're doing and how that can affect them. And again, that's where evidence through whether it's activity logs or potential areas of achievement. And if you can educate them in how making some changes can make things better, then I often feel that some clients can take that on board. Where it's very difficult at times, where people might have memory problems or attention problems or impulsive issues, which means they've sometimes done it before they've realized it wasn't a good thing, or they've forgotten what you said, or their attention changes during the task. So again, that's where we work closely with our psychologists or neuropsychologists to be able to put strategies in place. And it might be in some cases using support teams to be able to help guide the client to make sure they get the best outcome.
And in terms of challenges then, are there common challenges that you often face with neuro rehab and within the MTT?
I guess there's lots of challenges. That makes makes the world I work in very exciting and very interesting. I think it's much easier to make allowances sometimes for clients because you assume that they've had injuries or disabilities that are going to compromise some element of the way they work or interact or learn and so on. I think sometimes it's much harder within the MDT because you expect them all to be working in the same vein as you are. So my tolerance sometimes within the MDT is not always as good as it is with my clients. But most of the people know me well now and manage me back, especially the psychologists. I think one of the things that I find sometimes quite frustrating are where we have case managers or appointed clinical leads who in that position feel their role is to know what your job is and define your recommendations and tell you what you need to do and how to do it and when to do it and how long you can do it for. And that can be frustrating because I don't think they always do have the expertise in the area and field that I work in or other members of the MDT work in. And it would be nicer for them to be able to ask you what your professional clinical opinion is or what you feel the recommendations are and then have a discussion about it. Again, I think sometimes it's a learning curve and you all have to work together. Sometimes it's the client that comes off worst when there's a mismatch between what the experts feel should be happening and what sometimes you're told needs to happen instead.
And you mentioned earlier, obviously, that your type of therapy in neurophysiotherapy tends to be a lot more hands-on than perhaps some of the others. So presumably COVID and all the restrictions that came into place because of that must have had a real impact on your area of work in particular.
Yes, I think a little bit like a brain or spinal cord lesion. I think the first 3 months we all went into shock and Optimize closed. We did everything virtually, which was novel in itself, but actually opened my eyes to what actually goes on in the home that we're not always aware of and helped me understand how much more education and training and support we need to put in there rather than just assume that because we've done it once or twice that everything's going well and it should just continue. But now it means that I know I have to do that more regularly to make sure everything's on track. Otherwise, it doesn't really complement the work we're doing. When we returned to clinical practice, when we were allowed, then the shock of having to have temperatures taken, walk over sticky mats, change our clinical working environment for only one therapist to be working in one area because we have no curtains, so we have to have hard walls and the dreaded mask and rubber gloves. And I always thought I could deal with the mask, but I didn't think I'd be able to do my job in rubber gloves, really. Nitrile ones rather than real rubber. But actually, I've adapted really quite well, and it's quite nice to handle feet and sweaty armpits in a glove because it doesn't affect how I eat at night. It's maybe a stop to the diet that I would have had running on those days where somebody's feet are a little bit smellier than others. I'd say it's not ideal. It's something that we had to do. It's something that we've adapted skills for. It's become more challenging again during the summer, especially when we have a heat wave, when you're trying to work in gloves that are full of water and trying to escape your hands. And I think we're at a time where we're changing in between gloves and no gloves. And I guess that depends on the clients we work with, making sure the risks are at their minimal and being able to provide still the therapy that the individual needs, gloves or no gloves.
Yeah, but it's interesting hearing you talk about the almost kind of silver lining to that whole situation as well, and that you might have thought, as you say, that you'd kind of moved on from working on a specific task or body area and you thought family or caregivers had that kind of in the bag, and then you see a video and you see kind of what's happening in that home environment and have to kind of revisit and just go back and have a little refresher on that particular exercise and training aspect. So I think that's a bonus, I suppose, if there is any, to what's happened.
Yeah, it can be very diluted. I think the other thing that's really quite hard is that quite often we allow not just the clients have to be there, but we allow family members or support team to watch the clinical session. And what you quite often find is you've handed over a program that's really important for them to reproduce and have opportunities to practice to be able to get the change that you need in specific areas. And then what we might do is adapt or change that. So we might work on other areas in different ways that really support an increase in the level of carryover and change. And then when you see other people doing what they're meant to be doing as a program, they quite often try to put in some of the techniques that you've been using because they look quite good, but they haven't quite got them right in the right way or for the right reason. And sometimes it can be a little bit of a disaster, but then it reassures you that more intervention needs to be provided to reinforce the things that they need to do that's going to make the real difference. And that could be hamstring stretches, it could be a particular way of sitting in a chair, or it might be integrating the use of a hand and an arm in a particular way. And those are maybe more important to be repeated on a daily basis than it is for them to be doing cartwheels or backflips or other things we might have done in therapy that day in a very specific, safe way.
You spoke before, Sue, about the importance of effective teamwork within the MDT. And I'm sure that applies to the input of the litigation solicitors as well. Are there occasions where you sense that there is some tension between what the lawyers are looking for and what you're able to provide as a member of the MDT?
Other than paperwork tomorrow or yesterday, I would say I feel like we are, that we might have two separate parts to the team, but in the same way as you go away and do your job and bring it back to the table, I go away and do my job, bring it back to the table. There is some integration of all of those things between the MDT members, but in general, we're all working for the best of the client. The only time that I see it is a little bit more challenging, and it's not in every case, but I find that sometimes we're working along the lines of trying to achieve goals that we feel are within the client's ability or potential, and settlement occurs and then funding stops. And that's, I think it's sometimes quite sad because it's not always helpful for the client, but sometimes it's really demoralizing for the therapist working to try and achieve specific goals that they might have been trying for 3 months or a year. And you might not be far off that, but then when resources are cut, then it just makes you wonder what it was all about. That can be a frustrating time, but I would say it doesn't happen often, but it does happen occasionally. And it's where resources are going to fund something else rather than the therapy that it was outlined for.
I can see how that would be deeply frustrating. Nobody wants to start a job and take pride in what they're doing, only to have it curtailed for reasons outside of your control.
Yeah, and I think one other area I think to highlight is for me, I think everybody thinks a lawyer's a lawyer, a physiotherapist a physiotherapist, a plumber's a plumber. And I think we all know that there's lots of variability within that. And I've worked with some very inexperienced lawyers that can be really quite disastrous for a client, and it can result in problems where the client's problems aren't fully identified. They don't have the appropriate experts or therapists on the case. They don't necessarily put in the rehabilitation that the client needs. There are insufficient resources, and the client's left with a lifetime of challenges that really the litigation was put in place to try and avoid. I'm very fortunate because a lot of the lawyers that I work with have a high level of expertise, but it's every now and again one pops up from somewhere you don't know, and it's a very different level of service that they get to the ones that I'm used to working with.
And certainly in those situations, we would like to think that at some stage somebody would speak to the client or to their family and signpost them to organisations that could put them in the right direction and ensure that they get the representation that they need.
Yeah, I think if it depends on where the person is within the litigation, sometimes they can come a long way down the line where settlement might be imminent, and then it's maybe too late for anybody else to resolve the issues. I think if it's very early on, then or even halfway through, then there's still often time to be able to support improvements in those areas.
So as an integral part of the MDT, getting the right lawyer is as important as the right neurophysiotherapist.
Yeah, most definitely.
So I think we spoke earlier about having pride in what you're doing and the results that you've obtained. What would you say your proudest achievement is so far, Sue?
It's really hard, isn't it? I guess personally, competing to a high level and representing England and Great Britain for me was a brilliant achievement. Professionally, becoming a physio and becoming a bull bath tutor, publication of work, again, wasn't something I would have planned, but again, a great achievement for me. And I think more recently, although I'd say over 10 years ago, was setting up Optimized Neurotherapy Centre. But initially, I was thinking of all the clients and what they've achieved. And that could be walking down the aisle. It could be getting onto a bike again. It could be, like you say, being able to go to the toilet on their own, being able to live independently, doing the Great North bike ride, coast to coast, doing the Great North Run. But really, it's meeting and working with so many amazing people and being part of their achievements, whatever they are, and that move them on to the next chapter in their life, really, is probably one of the sort of proudest moments, really, is when somebody gets to that end point with a new place to be, and it's a lot further away than when they started.
No, absolutely. It sounds like it's about taking pride in their achievements and the part that you've undoubtedly had in helping them to get there. But as you said earlier about them as well, having that motivation. And you said you can't lead a horse to water, but I've met you, Sue, and I think you could pretty much get it there.
Yeah, try my best. You surround the horse with water. So it doesn't matter where they go, they're going to get it. Yeah.
That's fabulous, Sue. Thank you so much indeed for your time. That's been a really fascinating insight into the role of the neurophysiotherapist within the NDT. We're very grateful to you.
No, thank you very much for asking me.
Thanks very much to all of you. Very much enjoyed listening to that. Very quickly for me, we release our webinars, podcasts and blogs on a regular basis, all of which can be found on our website, www.sintons.co.uk, should you wish to take a look. And obviously that includes all episodes of this podcast series. You can also follow the Neurotrauma team on Twitter, two accounts, @SintonsNeuro and also @SintonsPI. If you'd like to discuss anything our speakers have raised today further, please don't hesitate to get in touch with them. Their contact details can be found on their respective websites and also via their LinkedIn profiles. We hope you've enjoyed listening to them as much as we have enjoyed recording them and that they've been beneficial and added value to you. Thank you once again for listening. Stay safe, everyone, and we'll speak to you soon. Thank you.